Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 170. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I'm here with Alex Khalafi, Security News Writer. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Rob. How are you doing?
Good. It's been a while since we've podded. It's been over a month. March was a dry month for podcasting, I think, because we were pretty busy. We had a lot going on.
We got hit with SolarWinds 2 in early March.
A lot of cybersecurity news and developments, and there were new developments with SolarWinds. There were other issues going on. There was the Celeon FTA attacks. But the big one was the Microsoft Exchange server attacks, the 0 days that were revealed just over a month ago. I believe it was March 2nd, for 0 days that were under exploitation in the wild, and that Microsoft disclosed on March 2nd and patched. But the story, as we know, did not end there. There was a lot more, stuff going on that we're going to get into. And I would say I don't want to balance this against SolarWinds, but in context of SolarWinds, in comparison to the SolarWinds attacks, because that is so recent, and at the time that happened, it was considered to be, you know, catastrophic, at least for the government. It was an earth-shaking series of attacks and an overall threat that put the scare into a lot of folks in the InfoSec community and the enterprise community and the federal government community. But the Exchange attacks here, proxy logon is one of the vulnerabilities is known. They're pretty bad. We're in the same ballpark, I think, in turn. And we could be even beyond sort of what SolarWinds is and has become in terms of the amount of damage and number of organizations affected. Would you say it's been as bad or maybe potentially worse than SolarWinds based on your understanding of both?
It's a very strange thing because in one way I would call this apples and oranges because it's a different situation with different consequences,
very.
And different victims, maybe some overlap, which we'll talk about later potentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at the same time, how do you not compare the two? Because you have this moderate story of, oh, this major tech company got hacked. That's kind of weird. I mean, something like this happens every once in a while. And then the consequences just kept stacking and stacking and stacking over and over again. And we're a month out, over a month out, from March 2nd. March 3rd was when the original story we wrote went live.
Yeah.
And it's followed such a similar trajectory, even though it's two different. So I don't know. I don't feel as educated as I feel I can be to write this stuff. I don't feel educated enough to say objectively what's worse or what's better, but it's so hard not to compare them. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I should note for the Exchange server attacks, I felt like with SolarWinds, we started to know there was a steady trickle of information about what was going on, who was affected, what we knew about the Sunburst malware, the tools that were being used in addition to Sunburst, the backdoor, what products were affected, what wasn't. There were some hiccups with the incident response for SolarWinds in the beginning, as you wrote about. You probably don't even remember that story, Alex, but you wrote a really good one because so much has happened since then. But with the Exchange attacks, there's just a lot of unanswered questions and some mystery around what went on. And I guess we should just jump right into it because this first one is a big one, and it's led to a lot of questions from a lot of people, including us in the media. And that is the fact that these vulnerabilities were under attack before the patches and the vulnerabilities were disclosed. Now, this isn't unusual. This happens all the time. A couple 0 days for a browser or, you know, a mobile OS or any application are under exploit. The vendor has to jump on it and they, you know, patch it up as quickly as possible. That's not really what happened here. This is like months in advance. So as you know, the researcher who works at a InfoSec consultancy, I believe based in Taiwan, DevCore, found this back in December. Mm-hmm. And had been doing research. And as far as we know, there was no sort of like, this wasn't an incident response related discovery where there was an attack. I think they were just researching Microsoft Exchange and they found a couple of these vulnerabilities, including proxy logon, which is, you know, basically the worst of the group. Yeah. And then so DevCore discovers a second one right before the end of the year in December. They spin up a working proof of concept exploit based on these two vulnerabilities. And on January 5th, they send the vulnerability report to Microsoft. And fast forward a few weeks, Microsoft sets a timeline. We're going to patch this in, you know, patch Tuesday in March. But they have to drop that because it's under not just sort of periodic exploit, but a pretty extensive exploitation. And the proof of concept exploit that DevCore developed is being used in the wild. Mm-hmm. So that now that is unusual. And this has led to questions about whether Microsoft, you know, in informing large customers, large government customers, large partners. I mean, this is typical for the disclosure process. You confirm that the vulnerability is a vulnerability. You confirm that the POC works. You confirm, you investigate, you try to find if there's, you know, that there's other vulnerabilities in play or other threat vectors. You develop the patches. You get them in place. You test them out. You start looping everybody in so that you can tell them when this comes out, you got to patch immediately. Well, so they did all that, and a part of that whole process is telling, you know, the big partners, whether it's an Intel or whoever, and your big government clients, your big enterprise customers, your big, you know, cloud providers, whoever, that this is coming and they've got to take it seriously and they need to start investigating it or preparing for it now. So, you know, there was this mystery about how did this POC end up in the wild. But not only that, a few days after this was disclosed by Microsoft, some other security vendors say, hey, we spotted activity, exploitation activity of, you know, proxy logon and one of the other vulnerabilities back in early January. And now that's strange. So just a matter of days or I guess a couple weeks for proxy logon after those first two vulnerabilities are discovered, you know, some third party researchers start picking up exploitation activity in the wild well ahead of when Microsoft discloses it. So it seems like there's two things going on here. It seems like there may have been a leak of the proof of concept exploit. Not may have been a leak. I mean, I think we're pretty clear that that got out in the wild somehow. There's the chances that this is just a coincidence is pretty unlikely. And then there's also the question about why did exploitation activity of a couple of these vulnerabilities start so soon after DevCore discovered it? Now, both companies, DevCore and Microsoft, have said we've looked into this. There's so far no sign of any leak, any breach, any, but something happened here and no one seems to know what it is. And, you know, from my own perspective, it sure seems like that this threat group somehow picked up chatter, picked up some indicators that this vulnerability had been discovered, had been burned, and started ramping up attacks back in January. And same with the POC. The POC got out somehow. Some threat actor was potentially watching stuff and picked it up. And because I mean, is there any other reasonable explanation as to what happened here? I don't think so. I don't know about you, Alex.
Yeah, so the only reasonable explanation other than the one you just described would be if there's more to this story that we still don't know yet. And then the thing I want to point to here is the Hades ransomware story that went out at the end of March, where Awake, which is the sort of, it's a security angle of a division of Arista.
Arista Networks.
Yes. And they did something about Hades ransomware, which is one of the three main ransomwares we've discussed that have come out of this, although only one is new. And anyways, and it might even be four ransomware, so that's beside the point. But in an article they wrote, the author wrote that Awake Labs vice president Jason Beavis, that there was an attack where they identified a Hafnium domain that was associated with an Exchange server, and that an unnamed third-party forensics firm connected the domain to a Hades attack in December 2020, 1 month before when Exchange server attacks were believed to have started in January of this year. Now, the wording in the article was slightly confusing, and we were told after that, like, we don't actually know if this is connected to Exchange. But the timing of having an Exchange, a sort of a domain that touches Exchange server exactly 1 month before our earliest recorded data of this blowing up is very sort of suspicious. And granted, we don't know if we don't know the truth behind this, but it suggests that there might be additional layers that we don't understand to this story yet, which wouldn't be surprising because think about how this story's grown. Or we had Hafnium, the Chinese nation state group, being identified as Microsoft by Microsoft as sort of the main culprit at the beginning. That blew up into several nation state and non-nation state entities exploiting this.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple ransomware, including new ransomware families, sort of hitting this, and then new information every week that questions the information we had before. Not to run through all our news at once, but CISA was talking about how U.S. agents, they was telling U.S. agencies that they need to scan for Exchange server attacks, and they had specific dates when everything needed to happen by, and it's very weird because we don't know whether U.S. government agencies were hit in this Exchange server attack, but it seems like at least there are or were vulnerable Exchange servers at some point.
Yeah. So, let's go from the disclosure timeline here and whether or not there were breaches or leaks. I mean, I think you and I are both in agreement that either there was some type of leak or multiple leaks or breaches or something.
Yeah.
Or there's a whole nother dimension to this story that we're not privy to because it just makes no sense for that exploitation activity. Like there's just no current explanation for it right now. But, you know, I mentioned that the attacks started to ramp up and, you know, right before the patch, you know, was supposed to come out in March patch Tuesday, and Microsoft moved it up a week to March 2nd. The first, you know, just because normally they wait till the second Tuesday of every month. They moved it up to March 2nd because this exploitation activity was ramping up. They didn't know why. And it wasn't just Hafnium. There were other groups that were taking advantage of these vulnerabilities. And it's just like, well, how did they know? Like what's going on here? And one of the things that we learned with that situation is there were a lot of web shells that were being deployed, and one of them was China Chopper, and it's associated with Chinese threat groups, Chinese ATPs. And, you know, there's a the sort of the conventional wisdom, the popular explanation for this is that, well, you know, you can scan for web shells in certain environments, and, you know, there may be threat actors looking for existing web shells that another threat actor may use that they can piggyback off of. And China Chopper is sort of a well-known one. And, you know, maybe they just some opportunistic hackers, cyber criminals just started scanning and picking up on this and word spread and boom. It does seem weird though, right? And then you add in with the POC being available in late February and that being online. I don't understand. How this stuff got out of, like, how the attacks got out of control so quickly that Microsoft had to force the patches out early. And like you said, Hafnium was identified as the attacker, and you and I and Ariel, our colleague Ariel Waldman with the security team here, like, I've talked about this a number of times. Like, normally with nation state attackers, you're talking about guys that they try to maintain a low profile, and they try not to wreck the house when they make an intrusion. Because what's the point? They're there for cyber espionage. They're there to collect intelligence. They're there for surveillance and to spy. And there's no sense in really, like, blowing up their spot. Like, if they've got persistent access, they want to keep it, and they want to keep it quiet. That did not happen here. Mm-hmm. Like, suddenly all these, you know, other... we assume other threat actors and hacker groups and cyber criminals start leeching onto these web shells and exploiting these vulnerabilities. And the question is, well, how'd they even know about it? And why did this sort of ramp up so quickly? And there's just been, again, no explanation for it. The only thing I can think of is that, you know, maybe this POC, you know, it leaked, it got on some dark web forum. And as you know, there's a lot of stuff on those dark web hacker forums and markets. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of spread, and other people started picking up on it, and it became like a free for all. It's like John Wick. Like, all of a sudden the bounty goes out on John Wick and people know it, and they're just like, they drop everything, and there's you know, like, this is a high value zero day, and this is a great POC, and you can get in people's exchange servers pretty easily. Let's do it. My point to contradict myself on that is that there's no, like, you know, that these vendors, the threat intelligence vendors specifically that do dark web monitoring, they're on these forums all the time picking up chatter about what guys are doing and what, you know, what the latest vulnerabilities are and what, you know, who's selling access to what and who's doing what hacking and, oh, here's a hot new POC or whatever. So far, a month after this, there's been no findings about any chatter or about any leak of this specific POC or anything. So there's no indication that my theory about this just sort of blowing up on the dark web, that's even true. No, it's just a reasonable explanation. That's it.
We would have seen it, right?
Right.
Like, I assume someone we would have seen it. With this many people, this many smart people in security, someone would have spilled the beans on it.
Yeah, someone would have found, like, an errant sort of GitHub post that, you know, contained this POC, or a hacker forum post, you know, an AlphaNet post. Well, AlphaNet's gone, but, like, you know what I mean? Like some hacker forum where people, you know, are losing their minds over this POC, or, you know, hey, this is a zero day and you can take advantage of it, you know, get it while it's hot. There's none of that, at least that I've seen. And I we've been looking into this now for obviously several weeks. Mm-hmm. So then you go from that to, you know, we don't know who's behind all of these other attacks, and we don't know why they spread so quickly. And to your point, Alex, like, well, has the government been affected? It makes no sense that if Hafnium, if a nation state threat group was trying to had possession of these zero days and were exploiting them, like, well, I mean, the government is not the hardest thing that, to hack. And if you want to get in and get some juicy communications, get some emails, like, this is a really easy way to do it. And, you know, we should turn to the story you wrote about just recently with CISA's updated directive, because that, to me, spoke volumes.
Yeah, the directive, which was basically CISA telling the various agencies, like, hey, you need to be patched by this day, and by, it was like June, you need, or I think it was like June, you need to have all these firewall, you need to have a firewall in place,
yeah,
you need to have
basic.
all these basic things, which yeah. may have just been standard practice and might not actually sure. reflect negatively, but at the same time, the fact that this has to exist means that it's not no government agencies who had vulnerable Exchange servers or had yeah. servers that could have been vulnerable.
And then with the the key part to me was the Microsoft saying, so Microsoft released those two tools
yes.
to detect for web shells and to detect for IOCs related to this exploitation. And I mean, just because you patch these things after the fact doesn't mean an attacker wasn't able to exploit it previously and then set up a web shell, and then they don't need the vulnerability anymore. If the web shell's in there, they can just use that as a backdoor. And so when the directive had said that they're required to use those two free tools to scan for web shells and IOCs. And they had to do the scans by, I don't recall what date. Do you remember what?
I have it open now. I didn't have it open originally. So by noon Eastern time on April 5th, agencies must run both the tools.
Yeah, so today. Yeah, we're recording yeah. this on April 5th.
And actually, I think they had to patch before that.
Right.
That was a few days before. But by June 28th, it was the various hardening requirements.
Yes, right. Yeah.
Okay.
No, the patching was like, do it now. You got to get this done, and we're going to be checking within a few days or a week or whatever. But yeah, the tools, I mean, on the one hand, I think that's just good advice. Like, that's just, you should do that anyways. You should run these tools or other similar ones that are, you know, there's a few other sort of, I wouldn't say competing because these aren't products, but, you know, some security researchers have developed other free tools and thrown them up on GitHub and posted them online and encouraged people to run them, to scan for, you know, China Chopper and other web shells and to scan for these IOCs. And I mean, it's just a good idea. If you have an on-prem Microsoft Exchange server, you should run them. But they're not just like saying, hey, you should run these or please run these. They're saying, you must run these and you must produce results from these scans to us, to CISA, by a certain date, which, I mean, certainly suggests that they think that there's a threat, that they think that there could be more than a few of these web shells and persistent access established in some departments or agencies. And I don't think that we've heard the last of this. Do you?
No. And thinking about this whole government thing and how the government hasn't become a major player in this story yet makes me do compare and contrast to SolarWinds
yes,
in multiple
yes.
ways. Yep. Because I know Microsoft is one of the biggest companies in the world. I know that they have the Exchange, they have the enterprise stuff, they have the personal computer stuff, the operating right. system, the Office, etc., the video game stuff, whatever. And SolarWinds is not as widespread of a company. They're smaller and they're specialized.
They're big, but they're smaller. Yeah, and specialist. Yeah.
And most companies are small compared to Microsoft. But that's beside the point. What I was gonna say is, Microsoft hasn't. I'm not inside Microsoft, but it feels like Microsoft comparably has kind of gotten away scot-free with the Exchange server attacks compared to SolarWinds, and we don't have enough visibility to say that for sure.
Right.
But
right.
I feel like you can cut this if you want.
No.
Okay. I feel like SolarWinds, from a PR standpoint, has been obliterated by their attack.
Yeah.
The same thing cannot remotely be said about Microsoft. And I've been, as I've said multiple times, I cover video games. Microsoft is killing it in video games right now.
Yeah.
And like they've had so much good press the last few weeks.
So much.
But here it's just, it's not the same. And I wonder if the fact that there hasn't been these, the House of Representatives calling up Microsoft to have this very visible meeting, to not have the headline that says the government was hacked through Microsoft hardware or whatever. Yep. I wonder if that's a differentiator. But really, that's kind of one of the most notable things here, is that SolarWinds, it feels like, has gotten completely destroyed in a way, not literally, but like for now at least, in a way Microsoft just hasn't been. Which is not good or bad. It's just very interesting.
The two things I'll say. Number one, I think there is a distinction between like vulnerabilities are going to happen. Getting pwned top to bottom and having somebody infiltrate your organization to the point where they can drop in backdoors into legitimate software updates, that's different. I think where this is a little different for Microsoft is that you have serious questions about what's gone on with the disclosure timeline. You know, was there some type of leak on their part with this POC, with these vulnerabilities? We don't know. I mean, they said they investigated, and so did DevCorp. But like, that POC did not drop online until very late in the game, when the sort of coordinated disclosure of partners and big customers started for Microsoft. And that's just a fact. I'm not saying it was definitely Microsoft's fault, but that's so. And I'll push back slightly. I think heat is starting to build on Microsoft here.
I think they're taking longer, you think?
It's taken a little longer, because initially, you remember, like when this first broke, Microsoft said this is the impact's a limited number of customers, and you know, that it's a nation state threat, and we're addressing it, and you know, patches, and you just, okay, you patched and we're moving on. But we obviously haven't, because there's questions about that timeline. There's questions about how the threat actors knew that these 0 days were discovered or burned, because it certainly seems like, based on the exploitation activity, that they had some indication that the clock was ticking on these things. There's questions about the POC. There's questions about why these attacks started to ramp up. And yeah, I think if we get into later this week or next week, I think that'd probably be about the time limit here. And we start to hear about federal agencies or departments getting attacked through these vulnerabilities. Then I think you are going to have a potential hearing or two, or at least some politicians or federal agencies starting to question, you know, how did this stuff get out in the wild? Why did attacks start when they did? And what is going on here? Like, we want a as clear as possible a view of the disclosure process and the timeline. Because this is bad news. If there is a way that a major nation state threat, an APT, was able to break this confidential disclosure process and find out what was going on and use that to their advantage and cause additional damage that they wouldn't have been able to cause if they didn't have that insight, then they got to figure it out. Like, they've got to find out now, like yesterday. It's bad news, but you're right. I mean, that's a good comparison to make, because you know, not to undermine my point, but you're like, SolarWinds was like a punchline. I mean,
who knows if SolarWinds is still called SolarWinds in 6 months, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was to the point where people were speculating that they were going to have to rebrand, that that their name is becoming synonymous with an all-time catastrophic attack. Now, we've learned since then that there are other layers to the story. They have, I think after an initial rocky period with incident response, they've done pretty well. They've gone before Congress. They've answered questions. They've tried to mitigate this and remediate this as best they can. But yeah, they took it on the chin. I don't know that that's going to happen with Microsoft. We don't know what the answers are to these questions, but they're big ones. And if it turns out that there was some type of breach or leak or culpability on Microsoft's part with the people that they informed about these vulnerabilities in the POC, then yeah, there's going to be a lot of pressure on them. They're going to get a lot of blowback.
Yeah, all good points. If I may close on a little food for thought as we wrap up this podcast. I've been looking through, as we've been talking, I've been looking through our list of articles over the last few months on searchsecurity.techtarget.com to look through sort of some of the Microsoft stories over the last month. And it's really been a four-month escalation in the making. You go back to December when SolarWinds happened and Microsoft was this hero, kind of. Not, I'm romanticizing it a little bit, but they were one of the major supporting entities in the SolarWinds attack, sort of making, they were sort of considered this very positive, highly respected security force, which they still are.
Then you
go on and they had this open source sort of breach as part of the SolarWinds attack, but it's like, okay, that seems kind of minor based on the way they're describing it. And then SolarWinds and Microsoft got into a dispute over how SolarWinds environment was compromised. Maybe Microsoft may have not had fault, but been a potential vector for it. Yep. And then one of the maybe darkly funny things is that I'm now remembering that Ignite happened the same week this happened, and the sort of exchange server. And my story for the 0 days went up March 3rd. My Ignite story went up March 4th, and I didn't even mention the exchange server thing in that story because back then it was a separate issue.
Yeah.
Right. Think about the escalation to where we are now from that initial point.
Yeah. It, in retrospect, the timing of Ignite and just with everything that happened with not just SolarWinds, but with obviously the exchange 0 days and proxy logon, like it's been a tough go. It's bad timing for Microsoft. But all that said, I think there's a world, I'll just end with this. There's a world in which Microsoft is, I guess, vindicated, for lack of a better word, that they come out and there's evidence that there was that they informed a third-party organization late in the disclosure game in February, and that third party, unbeknownst to Microsoft, was pwned. Or that they had loose lips and they put something out that they shouldn't have put out and hackers picked it up and it led to this spike in late February. Not Microsoft's fault. I mean, you've got to inform partners and so on and so forth. And that they had no part in sort of, causing any of the early exploitation in January, which predates their knowledge of the vulnerabilities to begin with. So they're in the clear and everything's fine. And everything's good, and there's no questions about how they handled this or not. But I think for now, you got to wonder what's going on and what has happened here. Mm-hmm. And I think until we get some additional answers, like beyond just like, hey, we're looking into this and there's an investigation, and so far we haven't found any cause for alarm, which is sort of what we heard from both DevCore and Microsoft, until we get like real sort of, full reports on this, it's, I don't know, there's going to be questions. So,
yeah, for sure.
But, for now, we're just in a holding pattern here to see how far the scope goes and who's been affected and yeah, I'm sure we're going to have more coverage of that, because it seems like, at least in sheer numbers, there was a lot more exploitation activity around this than there was the SolarWinds malicious updates, which is actually kind of surprising to me. But that's the world we live in. So I guess stay tuned for more search security news on that front. Yeah. And Alex, I appreciate you taking the time with me to catch up on all things Microsoft's Exchange Server attacks, proxy logon, disclosure timeline, threat activity topics, because obviously there's a lot of them.
Thanks, Rob.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security. I'm Rob Wright, and we will see you next time.